Hey, thanks for another episode of Triple Play. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Don't forget to check out our main sponsor, Brooks Bible College. If you're considering a degree in biblical studies or biblical counseling, consider giving them a call. You won't regret it. Great, grounded. And if you're somebody who's just wanting to get deeper in God's Word, you don't necessarily need the degree, but you just want to get deeper. It was actually started as a lay college. And so they love that. They're affordable, and you won't come out of college with a bunch of debt. So you can jump into ministry and do what God's called you to do without having that noose around your neck. That said, today I'm excited. We've known each other for a while, but I don't know how much we've had a lot of deep conversations. We've talked a little over time. But today's guest is Jeremy Lloyd. Jeremy, I'm trying to think. I guess you kind of popped in my horizon when you married your wife, because I knew your father-in-law.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of the printing stuff for Christian Family Day.
He did.
Back in the day. And so, anyways, it's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And it was funny because I actually wanted to get you on for your job.
Okay.
And then you made this announcement and I'm like, okay, well now there's no reason. I got to get this guy on there. And this is really funny. I don't know if I told you this, maybe I did, but as soon as I got you kind of, we were getting a date worked out, all of a sudden, like the managers are like, there's this guy you need to have on there. And I probably had three or four people all in a short period of time say, I need to have Jeremy Lloyd on our podcast. So I was like, well, I guess God's confirming something because we're already working on that.
Right.
And and so that was fun. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm curious too. I mean, I know we were talking earlier and I know a little bit, but where'd you grow up? Did you grow up in a Christian home? Kind of give us your background and where'd you go to school? Even though if it ain't in St. Louis, that's the St. Louis question.
Sure. Sure.
Tell us where you went to school, but also maybe your journey through college and seminary. I know we were just talking that you're still in it. So give us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I grew up in very rural East Tennessee. I was born in Mississippi and then but then when we were two, we moved to East Tennessee, Knoxville area. Knoxville area. And so my dad was a pastor till he retired a few years ago. And so grew up in as a pastor's kid. We lived right across from the church, which advantages and disadvantages, you know, we had huge yards to play in, you know, huge places to ride bikes and do rollerblades and everything. Best advantage was just mom and dad were just solid believers. And we lost mom back in July to cancer, but dad's still with us and just two of the best people I've ever known. And it's not just because they're mine, you know, just legitimately two of the best, most godly people I've ever known. And so great home to grow up in. I got saved when I was six, almost seven. And my dad was, it was a Sunday night service, and my dad was, we didn't do baptisms on Sunday nights very often, but for whatever reason, he was baptizing actually one of my friends. And dad just began to talk about what baptism meant and who was qualified for baptism and then baptized my friend. And just, I just felt, and in that moment, I just sort of heard and understood the gospel for the first time. I heard the gospel many times, but it was the first time I heard with understanding. And then just the Holy Spirit just kind of just said, you know, you're not qualified for baptism because you're not a believer in Christ yet. And so I just realized, well, I need to remedy this. And so after church that night, I went in. I was supposed to be in bed. Mom tried to get me to go back to bed because she thought it was one of the, you know, you have kids, I have kids. It's just like, you know, it's water or it's this or what, you know, the 18 things you need. And she's like, I think you need to go back to bed. And I was like, no, I need to talk to dad. And so I went in and dad led me to Christ there on his bed, you know, right when I was 6 years old. And so then I certainly didn't live a perfect life or anything after that, but by God's grace and obviously through a lot of prayer from my parents, I didn't have any of those, you know, rebellious turning away periods or anything like that. And stayed pretty close for early college and did in some junior college, I did a bachelor's degree in organizational management just so that I could go to seminary. And I've been working in the medical field kind of already, but God told me he wanted me to go to seminary. So August of 2009, packed up and moved to Southern Seminary and did a master's of theology there, which was just a blast. I'd hated school. I'd hated virtually all school my entire life until I got to seminary, and it was a blast. But Hebrew and Greek were not a lot of fun, but just about everything else was just a blast. You just get to dive in so deep. And fortunately, there was a girl there named Erica Hockenberry, who a very short time after that became Erica Lloyd. And so I was very happy about that. And then we had our first two children there at Southern. She was pregnant with our third when we left and moved to St. Louis. And so we have five children now, four boys and a girl. And we moved here in part because I graduated seminary and was still kind of working in the medical field. And what I wanted to do was church revitalization. I just want to be a pastor. That's why I went to Southern Seminary. I wanted to be a pastor. And I wanted to be a pastor of a church. You know, we mentioned John MacArthur earlier, just kind of what he's done, where he's just been there for so long and just been faithful and just preached the word and love the people and evangelize. And I just want to do that for 40 or 50 years and die and go home. And so that's what
your dad's been doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what I wanted to do, but it wasn't exactly God's plan. And so because kind of sent out resumes and things like that, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. But I'm a Southern Baptist, and so the Southern Baptist Convention has what they call SEND cities, SEND, not SIN. So SEND cities. Okay. So a few years ago, the world for the first time in world history went from having more people living in cities than in rural areas. This first time 10, 12 years ago that had ever happened. So the idea being, if you want to reach more people, you go where the people are. And so they put just a ton of money into church planting and church revitalization in cities that don't have a strong evangelical basis. And so St. Louis was one of those. And my wife and her family was from here. So it just kind of made sense to come. And so did that for a while where I was working with some, you know, a couple of different places as in church revitalizations, but it still didn't work out. And so
wasn't a good fit long-term for you.
Yeah. It just, the opportunity and financially just never really worked out. So I had been working in the medical field. I worked for an ophthalmology practice, did glasses and contacts and managed part of that. And I mean, I did that for 20, actually have an associate's degree in opticianry, very, very niche little degree there, but did that for almost 20 years. And the medical field can be nice. There's some awesome people in it, but it's fast and it can be heavy stress. And when you're managing, you know, you got people that work under you asking you questions, you got people that work beside you, and doctors are wanting things, and patients are coming in the door and they're calling the phone and everything. And so it can be pretty heavy stress. And so I just kind of wanted something different. And so we decided I was going to go back and get my PhD. And so that was a number of years ago. And if God allows and I'm able to produce, I hope to graduate in December from Midwestern Seminary with a PhD in ethics and public policy.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you asked about what I'm doing
now. Yeah. I was going to ask you, cause you kind of are using that ministry degree.
Yeah, I am. So thankfully, you know, about a year and a half ago, God opened just a really terrific door. And I've been in the optical world for close to half my life at that point. And
wow.
Because I started when I was 18 or 19, and then I just really wanted to be in ministry. And then one day this listing came across my computer screen for a place called Child Evangelism Fellowship that I had never heard of before. And I don't know how it eluded me, because I know so many people in the area that have been familiar with CEF. And but for some reason, it had completely eluded me. And it
really, did you know anything about their ministries?
I had never heard of them. I had no knowledge of CEF whatsoever, which again was surprising. My brother-in-law had apparently, I think my wife said he had interned there when he was like 19. And then my sister-in-law, her dad actually, it used to be a monastery years ago. And my sister-in-law told me that her dad moved down here from the north when CEF moved here from Michigan or Minnesota one. And they took over this, they purchased this monastery and they were changing it into CEF. And his job straight out of college was like a contractor. And so he spent about 2 years changing it from the monastery to, you know, doing all the stuff to change it to what CEF needed it to be. And that was his job. So my sister-in-law, you know, she learned how to swim in the pool that I can see outside my window.
Oh, that's
in my
funny.
Office currently and everything. But CEF's an amazing, amazing ministry. It's the biggest children's ministry in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have ministry in most countries in the world right now, minus we're about 13 or 14 short. We have had ministry in every country in the world except North Korea, and we're still trying to get in there. And there's times where they'll stand at the border in South Korea, and if the winds are blowing right, they have these big gospel balloons that are printed in Korean, and they'll just fill them with helium and just let them go into the sky and hope that it kind of goes over and that somebody can find it there and can become a believer. And so what I do is I'm an editor in the creative services department. And so, I mean, it's a fun job, man. There's all sorts of cool stuff I get to do. So I'll do anything from some of the boring stuff is just editing manuals, which isn't that exciting. It's as exciting as it sounds like it would be. But we have animated videos that we do with animators just in our department. And so it'll be mostly Bible stories or missionary stories or something like that. And there'll be and I get to edit the scripts for those. Or there's a podcast similar to like Adventures in Odyssey that used to be probably about the time when we were kids, you know.
Yeah, and I remember Adventures in Odyssey. Loved it.
Yeah, and actually it's still going. I think that's awesome where they're having like their, you know, whatever 1,000th episode and they're having a big celebration soon. But we do something like that with missionary stories, with preacher stories, and with sometimes the Bible stories. And so it's like five in a row and released 1 week at a time. And so I get those scripts to come across my desk and I get to edit those. And it's just a lot of fun. And every now and then I get to either do voiceovers or actually be in some of the videos. And so it's just a blast. Like I'm going to be, let's see, today's Tuesday. So on Thursday, I'll be in the recording studio and I'll be doing a voice for one of the characters in the podcast. And then I'm going to be acting. I think I'm going to be some character in some animated that we're doing. And earlier today I was editing the script that we're on one animation we're doing on the Book of Ruth and everything. And so it's a blast. You get to use the people I work with are just incredible. Not just my department, the whole organization is terrific, but it goes out and we just get to see, literally millions of kids around the world are getting saved every year because of the work of this organization. And we sort of refer to ourselves as one of the best kept Christian secrets because there's a lot of people like me that had never heard of CEF before, but it's just everywhere. And once I jumped in, I had all these people say, oh my goodness, you know, CEF's great. And what a great ministry. And just our outreach at Christmas time is one of our biggest pushes. And we saw somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 million kids profess faith in Christ. And just amazing. And the things I'm sitting, you know, I'm a redneck from East Tennessee and grew up with in the area where I grew up, there were more cows than people. And I'm sitting there tapping on my computer screen and the stuff that my fingers are able to touch goes out to literal millions of people. And it's a blessing. It's humbling. It's just amazing to be a part of.
That's awesome. So they do the material. There's a lot of different aspects of their ministries too. They do. There's the ones that do with schools.
Yes.
Good news clubs.
Yes.
Which I'm really familiar with. My mom just finished her good news club yesterday.
Okay. Great.
So and then as you said, they work with all sorts of other ministries providing pamphlets too. So I know. Several friends, we've actually had a couple of ministries on here that utilize their materials to get them out through Africa and parts of the Middle East and sharing the gospel with young children. So it's really cool.
I've been there a little over a year and a half now, and I'm still just learning stuff all the time about different ministries that we have. And it's just such a wide reach that they have. And so it's very faithful. It's great. It's gospel based. It's solid. And man, it's humbling to be a part of something this big. And I just love it.
And nobody really knows about it. I love that too. Like I've known about it because I have had friends that work there and a lot of people who are involved in a good news club, but I find it really funny because most people don't have any idea. You're right.
Yeah.
It's a well hidden secret.
Yeah. And we have some stories that come in sometimes about just some of the faithfulness of some of our people. Like there was a guy that not this past year, but year before on a Christmas outreach that was in like the Amazon jungle and was going up the river backwards on a canoe and had to get out numerous times to climb waterfalls with his canoe and his CEF material so he could go and reach these unreached people groups in the jungles that had never heard the gospel before so he could take them to them. And then in Ukraine, when the war started, there were good news clubs that were supposed to be happening. I mean, literal rubble around there, literally feeling buildings shake. And there was a scheduled good news club and they couldn't have it because the bombing sirens were going off. And so they just thought, well, then the bombing sirens stopped and they could kind of get back up and everything. And they thought nobody was going to come. But shortly, like after the sirens stopped, the people started to trickle in with their kids and everything so they could have a good news club. In a bombing area,
right?
Just, you know, there's people all over that are getting harassed and things like that. You know, it's pretty easy and comfortable over here in the U.S. to be a Christian most of the time, and I hear stories like that and people whose names I don't know, but that just make me feel very small by comparison to their faith. There's just some amazing gospel believing, Christ loving people that are a part of that ministry around the world.
Amen. That's really cool. That's really cool. I was curious about your position there and how that was going. That is awesome. So you have that going on, but then you made a recent announcement.
I did.
So tell us about the announcement and tell me what led up to this announcement. So what's the background?
Yeah. So I am running for state representative for District 104, which is in St. Charles County, mostly St. Peter's area. And there were kind of three things that sort of played into that God just sort of opened the door. Phil Christofanelli, who's the current rep, is termed out. And so the seat will be open. And so that was one of the things. I won't be challenging him for it or anything, obviously. Then the other thing is that my job is flexible with this. So CEF, you know, I didn't know what they were going to say when I really started to think about this. I didn't know. They might have said, well, no, we really need you. Cause you know, about during session, the first half of the year, you're not there half the week. And so I do a lot of work, and so they said, no, we think that would be good for you, good for the ministry. So we're okay with that. So flexibility with them. And then the third thing is I'm about to finish school. And so if I were about 2 years ago where I was in school there, you know, I would not be doing a PhD and campaign and everything at that point. And so the politics thing has just been something I've always cared about. And I can remember watching, you know, different inaugurations when I was a kid and watching different State of the Union addresses. And for whatever reason, it's just a little kid, that stuff interested me. Now it's a passion. I read everything from policy books to U.S. history. I love U.S. history. Mm. And so I probably read a couple dozen and biographies about presidents or something or in that sphere every year, you know, just a whole bunch of them. And so I just can't get enough of all of that. But then the degree I'm working on is ethics and public policy. Cause as I said, at the time, the full ministry position just wasn't opening up, and the politics thing was something that made a lot of sense. So I thought if I get a degree in ethics, you know, I can still, you know, what church wouldn't like to have a pastor that can walk them through, okay, here's this IVF controversy that's going to, how do we think biblically about this? Or here's this other situation over here with immigration. How do we think biblically and love these people, but do right by our country at the same time? How do we think through these things? I mean, there's a lot of churches that would be helped by that. So I thought, well, I can still be a pastor if I get a PhD in ethics, but that opens up different doors as well. And so I didn't really expect to jump into office, but it just sort of presented itself. And at first I was just like, nah, I'm just, you know, I don't think that's what I'm going to do. I like talking about policy and reading and writing and researching and everything, but I'm not sure that's necessarily for me, but it just kind of continued to come up. And one of the biggest hurdles for me was my wife and kids. And because a lot of guys that I know, they will be gone from their wife and kids for half the week, for half the year. And, you know, my five kids range from 11 down to 2. And I mean, they need their dad. Right. And my wife needs her husband, maybe not as much as I like to think that she would, but she at least needs me to come in and be referee and be the principal and come in and lay down the law when the kids, you know, it's been a rough day. And so I was just not willing to do that. And so that was my biggest hurdle, is I just thought I'm not willing to do that. And I was just driving home from work one day and I just thought, well, can I take them with me? And has anybody ever done that before? And so I just started looking around and Andrew Koenig, who you had on, you know, recently, you know, he was the one, somebody gave me his phone number and I called him and talked to him and he just said, oh man, we did it and we loved doing it that way. And my kids loved it. And Brad Hudson, who's a guy that also did, he's a pastor in here in Missouri, and he has also done it and talked to me about it. And you know, it's not luxury. You're not making a ton of money. You're not living in a great place. And you actually have to buy big. Some of those guys will room together so they can save money. But you know, if you're taking your family up there with you, gotta have a place big enough for me. And Hudson was telling me, he's like, yeah, if we had like folding lawn chairs in the living room and everything. So it's not like, it's not this great luxurious living that you're going to do or anything like that. But I think when my kids are, if it works out, you know, I think when my kids are older, they'll look back on it fondly. And I think it'll be something neat to do, something we'll be happy that we did, something we can do a lot of good as well.
Yeah. I mean, sounds like you have a real heart to serve people.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't be in a position, even at your job, if you didn't have that passion or want to be in the ministry, right? Because one of the things about ministry is just the servant call of it, right? And certainly right now, more than ever, we need believers to engage in politics. Yeah. Because it feels like, you know, when we were growing up, I'm a little older than you probably, so, but at least when I was growing up, this whole idea of separation of church and state was out there. And so more and more of, as I've watched, at least, it seems like the church has kind of really separated itself from politics, which politics is life, it's culture.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think we're seeing some of that decay right now, you know, moral absolutes being gone. I have lost family members that, I'll talk to. And, I remember, gosh, recently one of them said something like, you wouldn't want the Bible taught in public school, or you wouldn't want Jesus taught in public school. And I said, absolutely. And then you were taken back. Well, that's, I said, well, what's replaced it?
Yeah.
Humanism.
Yeah.
You took the God and made it yourself. I mean, there's always, history has told us there's always going to be a God.
Yeah, sure.
There's always going to be an entity. Caesar said it was him.
Yeah.
At one point.
God created us to worship, and we're going to worship something. And right. So I came across this quote from John Calvin a little while back, and this is, so I wrote a paper where we talked about Midwestern. I was able to take a class in the Reformation with Dr. Dusing. And so I wrote the paper explaining that John Calvin was actually the person who came up with the conception of democracy. And so, which is really fascinating thing to look at, but he had a different belief on Christians being involved in politics and things like that. He said, no one ought to doubt that civil authority is a calling, not only holy and lawful before God, but also the most sacred and by far the most honorable of all callings in the whole life of mortal men. And, you know, Calvin was a pastor, so I'm almost kind of wondering, like, was he excluding being a pastor in that? But he, you know, it sounded like, but the idea was that, you know, he looked at it as a way to protect the church from different issues and from problems that could creep in as far as the government trying to crack down. Obviously, he's talking about a government that's run well and things like that. And so it is, in a sense, a calling. And so I don't know if God has called me to be a state representative, but I do know he's called me to at least run in this primary. You know, I can lose August 6th. I don't intend to. I don't want to. I don't think I will. But I'm doing this because I feel like this is something at least that God has called me to do at this point. And so there's a number of things that I'm passionate about. And so hopefully we can get elected and can give some really good years working hard to make Missouri a little bit better.
And Missouri seems to be having a turnaround. I mean, you just mentioned a couple guys in your conversation that, you know, one we've had on the podcast, but it seems to me like in rewinding, even in the latest turmoil of what's going on in Jeff City, that there's this up and coming fresh group of people who are wanting to see real change and not just play politics as normal. Yeah. Because politics as normal is why we're at today, and it's not working anymore.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's being led by, I guess, a bunch of people who are part of this Freedom Caucus. But anyways, I just find that very refreshing. I see that in the country, a re-engagement.
Yeah.
And in the political sphere, maybe because people felt like during COVID, their backs were against the wall. I don't know. I know certainly it made me, I was already engaged, but it definitely engaged me even more.
Yeah. Yeah. And so while I certainly understand, you know, what you're saying and agree with you, I don't want to say that Missouri is like anywhere near the bottom on like other states. I look at Missouri where we are politically, even though we have some challenges and some things we need to clean up. I look at us as being in kind of the same league as where I look at like Florida is and where Texas, even my home state of Tennessee in a really good spot in a significant number of ways. Yeah. There's no perfect state. There's no perfect government or anything, but yeah, you talked about some of those guys that are really just wanting to just stop playing around and let's just stop making this games and making this be out a game and people's lives are at stake. And so yeah, some of the guys in the Freedom Caucus they're doing a really good job. And so, The primary issue that I care about is the life issue.
I was going to ask you what your big issues were going to be.
So let me just go through them real quick with you. So if I'm emphasizing in my campaign healthy families, and so that's not necessarily the flashy, sexy campaign thing that's going to maybe draw headlines or anything. But outside of the gospel of Jesus Christ, there's not a silver bullet to fix all the problems in society. But the closest thing to it, I think, is emphasizing healthier families, because when families are healthy, children graduate from high school at a higher rate. Children are less likely to do crime. Children are less likely to do drugs. They're less likely to go to prison. They're less likely to commit suicide. And so when they come from healthy families, and just, I mean, every study agrees on this. I don't know that there's anybody that even really argues that healthy families are better for society, but our families are kind of a mess. And so the main thing I want to focus on is the life issue. I want all of the members of our families to be born. Okay. I want that to be paramount. And I think that Missouri right now is one of the safest places in the United States for unborn children. Obviously, there's a number of things going on in Jeff City that people are trying to mess that up, but that's going to be my primary issue. And then after that, I think taxes is another thing. I want more of my people in St. Peter's to be keeping more of their money rather than sending it over to Jeff City. Jeff City needs to go on a diet. You know, they've got enough of our money. They need to leave us alone. Let us spend our own money on our children, on our families, and things like that. Then education, education really needs some help, and there's a lot of education reforms that I'm in favor of, because just making it easier for kids, especially lower income children, finding ways to have better education as well. And then just families need to be able to protect themselves. And so the right to bear arms and everything like that, I'm a big fan of, because police, we've got great police in St. Peter's area and they do an amazing job, but they're not always, they can't be there as quick as criminals can be. And so I want families to be able to protect themselves as well. So as far as the life issue goes, let me just explain, I think, what I'm doing my dissertation on. So I'm a big fan of President Lincoln. And when I told you I was born in Mississippi, when I was 8 or 9 years old, we were at my grandparents' house in Mississippi, and my great-grandmother was there. And so I think President Lincoln sticks out to all the kids because of that, the funny hat and the beard and everything. And so I had learned something about him in school or something recently, and I just happened to say something about that.
Like any kid would, right? Yeah, I learned this today at school, dad, or whatever.
And then my mom, she bends over and just says, "You can't say his name in front of her." And me and my grandma, she wasn't scolding me. She's just kind of saying, let's just not do that. So as I got older, I kind of understood that my great grandmother, her father, my great great grandfather was a soldier in the Confederate Army, and they were not fans of President Lincoln at all. And so that kind of just stuck with me. And I grew up, listening to DC Talk and everything. And so, they talked about, colored people and everything. So it just really stuck with me. And President Lincoln and as I got older, a lot of what he said really just sort of started to seep down into my bones and everything. And so I've read so much of President Lincoln that I almost feel like he's a good friend. I know more about him than I do a lot of my personal friends. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking what President Lincoln believed about human dignity and trying to boil it down to the main principles that he believed in, and then saying this was President Lincoln's ethic of human value, human life and dignity, and then saying, I think we can apply this to other issues like abortion. So, for example, Lincoln said at Freedom Hall outside of Philadelphia, where they signed the Declaration of Independence when he was president, he gave a speech there, and he said, I've never had a political thought that did not stem from the Declaration of Independence. And so when he argued for something being right or wrong, he would every now and then reference the Bible. He would seldom on occasion reference maybe a philosopher or something like that. He based it off the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so, of course, the Constitution says life, liberty, and property. And so the idea that Lincoln believed was that those three things, life, liberty, and property, or life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, were in order. They were sequential, and they were done so on purpose. It's not like if I said to you, hey, what did you have for supper? And you said, I had a baked potato and chicken and broccoli. It's like those things there's no order for those things. But he thought that these three things were in order, because you can't have property unless you can have liberty, and you can't have liberty unless you first have life. Okay. And so those are in order on purpose. And so when he would look at slavery, yes, of course, in the United States, we have the right to own property and to defend our property. Of course we do. But that right cannot be put above the right of someone else's liberty, the right of someone else's liberty. And so So that is why he said, well, slavery is wrong because you're putting your right to property above, you're taking it out of order and messing it up that way. And so the abortion issue does the same thing, but with different rights. And so it takes liberty. We, of course, somebody has liberty over their body, but we're saying, well, that's not your body. That's the body of an unborn child. And you can't put your liberty, you can't put that above someone else's life, because that life is the primary issue. And so trying to go with that. And there's other things you can apply that to this. You can look at the issue of euthanasia and things like that. And somebody can't choose that they want to end their life because we were given our value by our creator. The Declaration of Independence, of course, as believers, we believe that we were made in the image of God. And so human life has value because God is the most valuable being in the universe. And so when he has put his stamp on mankind, and murdering somebody is not just evil because you're killing another person. It's because you're killing the image of God that's in another person.
Hmm. That's good. That's good. That's really, that's insightful. People won't have to guess where you stand and who inspires you. Right.
Right. So, right.
Yeah. There's a lot, and you said it well earlier, there's a lot being done on the side of the abortion issue or the life issue. But I like the order you said your priorities are, because it was life. And then, you know, you kind of got to the education, but that wasn't the next thing. So, and I liked how I could tell you thought those things out very much too, just like Lincoln.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. I'm not anywhere in the same universe as President Lincoln's brain, but if I were to boil myself down to people we would know, as far as just explaining where I come from, there's three guys I would probably say that at least as far as what I believe. So I would mix myself with President Lincoln's diehard belief in the founding principles of the United States. I would then throw in Calvin Coolidge's diehard belief in fiscal responsibility. And then I would also mix in the optimism and the belief in the American spirit of President Reagan. And so, again, I am much less impressive than those three guys. But as far as holistic beliefs, that's kind of where I come in on that.
And when you said the family, I thought that was unique too, because, you know, other than our relationship with God, that's like one of the, first of all, it's the first institution that God kind of puts right together is the family, the husband and wife and marriage. And so it'd make sense that it's one of the first things he's also going to attack, and he's going to attack hard.
Yeah.
And we're bearing the consequence of that. But also, you see a lot of, I think sometimes we get caught up trying to deal with the problems and not the root of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, like we see all these things going on and we want to attack all these and not realize that we can hit them all by hitting this thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And really, so the fact, I think, I mean, really, and I know that sounds overly simplistic maybe, but I mean, if we could get healthier families, it would cure so many of the problems that we have. And a lot of that starts with men needing to take more responsibility and being the man that God created them to be. You know, if you get somebody pregnant, you need to take care of that child. You don't need to run off and not just financially, but you need to invest in the life of that child. You need to invest in the life of that woman and protect that woman and protect that child and take ownership of your actions rather than just being immature and running off and not taking the responsibility and wanting to go off and do the next thing. So in the same way that Adam and Eve, they both sinned in the garden, but God, he called out to Adam when he was in the garden, and he also held Adam as primary responsibility holder because he didn't lead her well. He should have taken that snake and kicked it out of the garden, but he fell. It was a leadership failure on his part. He didn't lead his wife the way they should. And even Paul in Romans 5, when he talks about everybody being made alive in Christ, he says that we died in Adam. He didn't say Adam and Eve died. And so there, you know, it was the first parents is Adam and Eve both, but Adam's the one that's taken the responsibility there. And so more of the men here in our state, if they can take responsibility and show ownership of the things that they've done, then man, I mean, if that is going to really start to improve things in our society.
Yeah. Well, and getting a biblical perspective of manhood, and, you know, we just, podcast a few weeks ago had, we were kind of reiterating, we've done it so many, but it's going to keep coming on here because it's such an ongoing issue. And something I think we all need to be reminded of is, you know, this idea in the church of what a biblical masculinity is. So we've got the distorted view of what masculine is, and it's not correct.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's a great point too, because it's not just, you know, health and everything is good, but it's, you know, the manly men are not the guys necessarily that are in the gym lifting the weights. Now they might be tough and they might be strong, but they might be a terrible father. They might be a terrible husband. Now, some of those guys are great fathers and great husbands, and they can bench press, you know, three times my body weight, but that's not what masculinity is. It's about being what a man is designed to be. And, you know, a man can be a really manly man and love the cello or something like that, right? And so it has to do with taking the responsibility of the woman that's been there and taking care of your children, providing for them and protecting them in the ways that you can and nurturing them in such a way. And so, you know, as far as, you don't see a lot of dads that'll, you know, hug their kids in public, or they'll even kiss their kid on the forehead in public or something like that, because they don't want to feel like a sissy or something like that. Man, that's what being a man is you have these people, like my wife and my kids. I mean, if I lose this election, I don't want to, I don't think I'm going to, but if I lose this election, I'm going to go home to a wife that loves me and to five kids that you're going to run to me at the door every day when I get home from work. And there's no amount of money in the world, there's no amount of power in the world that could take that away from me, as far as me wanting to take other things than that. It's the highest joy. It's the highest satisfaction that I can have. It's the highest calling that I can have, is to be a good husband and a good father. And again, that's one of the reasons I was hesitant on the front end, like we said. But if I can take them with me and everything, then yeah, we're gonna make this work.
I think it's awesome, and I would even say one little thing too is, we talked about the weightlifter, but another view of masculinity that has been skewed too is the guy who's always at church every Sunday, but his wife runs the roost. It's the wife who gets everybody ready for church, and it's the wife when a decision in a church comes versus digging into issues, he goes, "What do you think?"
Yeah.
And that's how he goes, right? I mean, that's not leadership.
Yeah.
He's not leading the family. Yeah. He may be there. He may be present. He may have good spiritual knowledge, but is he applying that to his kids? Is he applying it to his marriage?
Yeah.
I've seen plenty of those too, where you look and quite honestly, I'll go, "Man, that's a great guy. He has some great knowledge, but I usually have a hard time connecting with those kind of guys, just because I don't like it when the woman is running everything that they do. It just kind of bothers me. It's like, where's your leadership? And I find them often even promoted to leadership, and that even makes it even weirder. You're like, everybody in church knows this guy is not even a leader in his own home.
Yeah. And so, as you know, I asked my wife's opinion on a ton of stuff and take into consideration, like, what she thinks. She's one of the wisest people I know. And she helped. Now she doesn't like to make decisions. And so even like on her birthday, I'll say, "Hey, you know, where are we going?" And she'll say, "Well, where do you want to go?" I was like, "It's your birthday, you know?"
Yeah.
But you know, she's very wise and she's very capable. And, you know, like the Proverbs 31 woman is not in conflict with the type of man that we're talking about. You know, she's going out and she's selling things and she's buying things and she's taking care of kids and she's doing all this stuff. But it says that, you know, her husband is respected, and that's not because he's sitting around and lazy and because he can't ever make a decision, he can't lead. It's because those two things work together very well with a woman that loves her husband and loves her family and takes care of all of those things. But he also goes out and he continues to lead through his vocation and through his actions and everything else.
It says that he's at the wall.
Yeah.
When you read that, it says, you know, her husband's at the wall. And that was where wise men would go to help do, you know, short judging of things within the town. So kind of what we would call administrative will a lot of times work. And so, and absolutely. And that doesn't, and you're right, it doesn't devalue the woman. I always look at that as like the pilot, co-pilot.
Absolutely.
You know, like both are good. They're both covering the instruments. They're both cross-trained a little bit. But, you know, as you said earlier, if the plane goes down, ultimately the pilot's held responsible, not the co-pilot. We don't often say that co-pilot. I mean, when that crash landing happened in the Hudson, we weren't writing movies about the co-pilot a whole lot. It was the pilot who saved the lives and made the decision. And the co-pilot actually had a different opinion at that time, but he listened to him and they were working things out. And that to me is a great picture of marriage, because hearing the other side, hearing the other thoughts, you know, sometimes you need those because you're making the wrong call. And sometimes you're like, ultimately, I've got to make the call and I'm going to go this route. And but I respect what you just said.
Sure.
And you don't have to value that person or their information, which is one of the things I liked about that movie too, depicting Tom Hanks on that. Go ahead. You were gonna say something.
No. So one of the things we had talked about was whether, you know, how more believers should be involved in politics and why there's not more of them. And I think there's this idea too that some people think the system is so broke that they just wouldn't make any difference, and that's just not really true. And so it, and you don't have to do, you know, state rep is a, it's like I said, it's not something I ever thought I would do. I didn't dream of it. I saw an open door and I thought, you know, this is something I should do. But even below state rep, I mean, there are all sorts of things like running for school board or running, you know, or mayor or even alderman or all sorts of other things that you can do. Being more involved in your church and helping your church help the community. I mean, there's a million different things that you can do to be involved politically, but there are two sides to being involved. And I think the pendulum can swing way too far one way or another. Sometimes you'll see, like around 4th of July, you'll see these churches and they'll just have this big explosive pro-American, like they have the American flag falling and they'll stand and do the Pledge of Allegiance and they'll sing the Star Spangled Banner and they have Uncle Sam walking down the aisles and like red, white, and blue confetti, you know, in a church. And in my opinion, that is a pendulum swinging way too far to one side. Now, I love my country. You come into my office at my house. I mean, there are a few hundred biographies of presidents and there, I've got different pictures of different presidents. I have bobbleheads of different presidents and just different America. But when it comes to church, you know, if let's say we've got a guy that immigrated to our church from Europe somewhere, and he's there on the 4th of July as his first Sunday, like what in the world is he going to think about this church that's doing all this on the 4th of July? Now, if your church wants to, you know, like after service, have 4th of July picnic or something, that's perfectly fine. No problems at all with that. But that part is just a little much for me. But then the pendulum swings the other way too, where somebody might say that the system's broken or that I just have no interest in being involved in that whatsoever. Well, this is your world and this is the world that God has placed you in. You live here. So, I mean, at a bare minimum, we should be voting and voting for people that are going to uphold our values and things like that. But at the same time, you don't want to pull back so far that you can't have any effect whatsoever and just be apathetic and just say, well, I'm not going to make any difference at all, whether by voting or by talking. You can knock doors for somebody or you can go and you can write your legislature, whether it's, you know, U.S. rep or a state rep or even your mayor or something like that. And I mean, one letter, one phone call can genuinely make a difference, especially state reps, you know, and down. You can get in touch with those people a lot easier than you think you can. Like a lot of state reps, you know, they're, if you email their, what they have on their website, that a lot of times just goes straight to their phone. You know, it's not like they've got 14 secretaries, you know, there's not the budget for that. And so they don't have all these people between you and them. And a lot of times if you just say, hey, can I grab coffee? I'd like to talk about this issue. Then yeah, I mean, most of the time you're going to be able to get in touch with those guys. So it's a lot easier to discuss those things and tell your legislature where your legislator where you stand on some of these issues and why it's important to you. So definitely Christians should be getting involved and pulling back is just simply not the answer.
Well, and I would even say, you know, make sure you're getting informed.
Absolutely.
You know, like I've had people say, I don't understand like this one that's going on right now, the IP reform. What does that mean? Why am I? And we've talked about it on our podcast a few times. It's very important because we don't change it, we're going to have a small segment of the state representing the whole state, and most and a bunch of that stuff is not going to be good. And so it is very important that you understand these issues. And at a minimum, you know, educate yourself and vote. I always say, at a minimum, you should try to do your best to. And we're seeing it played out right now in a lot of ways nationally. I mean, judges matter.
Yeah.
Find out. Yeah. I used to just go down and go, okay, if they've been there, they're there or not. And, you know, now I like to see their record. What are the decisions, especially on key issues? You know, where have they been harder on criminals or softer on criminals? Yeah. You know, what's a criminal?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of, and so I like to, educate myself on those things. And if I don't know, I reach out and try to ask.
Yeah.
I ask legislators, other judges. I try to, I'm not an expert. I can't know all that stuff. So I just try to find out who, you know, who's worth keeping and who's not, whether it be on a judge or whether like a school board.
Yeah.
You said it very well, you know, try to get Christians to run, support them, engaged, and beware of the issues, you know? And again, that's another one where you can write a letter. Now, I think what's interesting too, is a lot of people will say, I don't want to get involved in the school board because I don't have kids there or I homeschool.
Yeah.
I'm like, but you write money, right? You pay taxes. Yeah. Are you that flippant about everything? I mean, if you're writing a, let's say $3,000 check once a year and, you know, 80% of that's going to one place, wouldn't you think that you have a right to have a say-so? And usually when I let them know that between 75 and 80% of their check from their property taxes go to the school. Yeah. And so that big check is really supporting the school. And they're like, oh. And I said, and then if you're like me, you're probably more sympathetic towards educators, right? Not, well, sure. I want teachers to get paid what they're worth.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, I said right now, like in a great example, we're in a Rockwood school district. Rockwood has limited school buses, but they have lots of admin.
Yeah.
Now I've watched, you look at their record and you can look at from like 2007 to now or whatever, 2005 to now. And their admin bill has just skyrocketed with the layers of leaders that they brought in on the admin side. And then you look at like teachers pay and it's like, and educators and, you know, school buses. And I'm like going, like, what makes this school district so good if we're spending all the money up here on admin and we're not taking care of the everyday student, giving teachers adequate pay and busing? I mean, it seems simple. Yeah.
And that even gets worse when you go to college. I mean, you go to college and the administrative is just insane, the number of people that they have. And which, what's that going to do? It's going to raise tuition, of course. And so my grandfather was a professor of electrical engineering. And I've got an uncle that's an electrical engineer. I've got a cousin that's an electrical engineer. I did not get the math gene at all. Like one of my uncle tried to get me to take an advanced math class in high school, and it did not go well because I was just not built to be an engineer. But my grandfather was a professor of electrical engineering, and you know, who did the admin stuff? The teachers did, you know, right? And so like the guys they're teaching the classes, and so it makes sense. You know, we don't have to have professional administrators. Let some of these other people do it. And in some degree, not all of them are bad, and certainly some of them are worth having, but the amount of them is just, I mean, it's just exploding. And in college, all the way down, it's just exploding. And so if you can kind of trim the fat there on some of that stuff, then you're going to be able to put that more towards the specific students and helping them learn and helping them get better education. I mean, I want every...
And families. Yeah, they won't have to work as much because dad won't have to, you know, when we were growing up, I don't know how it was with you, but when I was growing up, you know, there wasn't near as many people working so many jobs and doing so much and trying to accumulate so much because they can enjoy their family.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I want every student in Missouri from K through 12 and college, I want them to have a world-class education. I mean, I think we've got some amazing teachers in this state, some amazing schools in this state. We have the resources to do it. We're just not using them as well as we can be. And so, as I said, some of the education reform that's going through, there are some, and I know that there's some people that get a little bit squeamish on some of those things, but man, I think I'm a capitalist in the marketplace, but I'm a capitalist when it comes to things like schools and everything as well. And that competition breeds strength. I mean, it was a Democratic president, John Kennedy, that said that a rising tide lifts all boats. And so if a certain school is not performing very well and maybe a charter school or something else comes in and gives competition and the grades continue to go well at this school, then yes, we ought to cultivate an atmosphere where there's more competition because that's going to make everybody stronger. I can remember, man, when I was in high school playing basketball my junior year, I had the position that I was playing at, and just truth be told, I wasn't really maybe going as hard as I could because there wasn't anybody else who was going to take my spot. I wasn't great, but there just wasn't anybody really that was that great. And then, man, right around summer practice, there was this new guy that started coming to school and he was pretty good and he was stronger than I was. And so he kept pushing in that. And I was just like, man, he's, and he was pushing me around. He's getting more rebounds than I was. So I started to try a lot harder and everything because I had someone else pushing me. I had someone coming after my position. And so that competition made me better, just like competition does. And so with school, there's a lot of room for improvement, and we have the, we're going to get there, and we're going to do right by our students, and we're going to make sure that they all learn well, and especially that the parents have a major say so in what their kids are learning, that all this secrecy about this left wing DEI agenda and everything else like that goes out the window. But that, as far, you know, we're going to teach them philosophy and teach them mathematics and teach them literature and the classics and all of these things. They're going to learn that stuff, and they're going to go out, and whether they stay here in Missouri or elsewhere, they're going to be the best.
Awesome. Well, anything that we haven't hit? I think we've been plowing through a lot today.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of is, if anybody is interested more in my campaign and what it's about.
Absolutely.
I do have a website. It's lloydformissouri.com. And you can go there, and I've got a number of my positions on there and just some write-ups. And you know, these campaigns take a lot of resources as well. And so if anybody wants to help out, there's a place to donate on there as well.
Well, just so that you know, while they're watching this episode, if they watch it, it'll be on the screen.
Great.
We'll put it on there, and we'll have it in the show notes. So whether you're listening or watching, you guys can click the links and go to his website. You can give. Find ways to help if you're out in the St. Charles area especially. But even if you're not and you got some spare time, he'll take some boots on the ground.
So I will.
So we had Andrew on here, and he was really young when he first ran, and there was actually a name that should have taken it, but he went out and just met with more and more people and did those boots on the ground. So
lots of doors.
Yeah, grassroots movements work. We see that more and more with social media. So any events you have, let us know. We'll make sure our listeners can also check out those. So sure. Awesome. Well, check out. Lloyd for Missouri here, and with all that said, don't forget to support those that support us, like Brooks Bible College, like Andy McCollum and those guys at Resource One. They do financial advising. You can give those guys a call at 636-458-1798, or Chris with CS Design if you need any web design or internet type stuff, 573-436-3717 for those guys. And lastly, Jeff Earhart with State Farm. His number is 314-821-JEFF or 5333. You can give those guys a call, and you might hear my co-host every now and then over there. So all that said, we appreciate you being here, Jeremy. Appreciate you guys listening. And don't forget to support, and don't forget to consider letting your neighbors know. Especially, we have a lot of listeners in St. Charles, family in St. Charles. So if you're checking in, make sure you guys let them all know. Vote for Jeremy Lloyd this fall. And we hope that you'll be coming back next time, and you'll be an elected person representing our state and bringing Christian values to the state of Missouri. I love it. Yeah, so
thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yep.
God bless, guys.
Bless.
You're safe.